The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast. John Anik and Kenny Florian.
I fucking love them. I can't get enough of them.
Let's hear that Boston next.
Big jab there from Duffy and Frank Mir is hurt now. Down goes Duffy out cold. Frank Mir does it again. Rock'em sock'em robots here. Oh my goodness.
Hyperbole.
They're a couple of absolutely self-involved bullshit artists.
Here are your hosts, John Anik and Kenny Florian.
Well, I will apologize about the pipes right off the top today. We are hurting for certain. It is Monday, August 19th. The year is 2019. It's episode 213 of the Anik and Florian podcast. Ken Flo, you know the all-nighter well, right? When you're on the road and you stay up after the show and hit that early flight or whatever it is. But I took it to a totally different level this time around. I just essentially did back-to-back all-nighters because I flew straight from Anaheim to Las Vegas to sign up for the Super Contest and had like a day to kill in Vegas without a hotel room and then flew the red-eye last night. So, fuck if I'm going to be able to complete a sentence here today. This is going to be tough. I'm not going to lie.
That's why you're a beast, though. That's why you're a beast. I can't believe it, man. That's crazy. First of all, how do you even sleep after UFC 241 with all the crazy fights that happened, right? Just the energy. You and I have stayed up many nights just talking after fights with events similar to that. But the energy was absolutely insane. And, of course, I wish you the best in your NFL season, my friend.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. You're absolutely right. The beginning of the problem is the fact that these fights are just crazy. So turning the brain off after that is very difficult. And you parlay that with the fact that you're pounding coffee and tea, an occasional Coca-Cola in there, but I don't like to admit that to Ken Flo. I've kind of gotten away from the Monster energy drinks. I do like Monster, and Brian Stan always used to bang those, you know, niacin-filled Monster energy drinks. But I feel like they affect my performance a little bit sometimes. When I start to flub, I'm like blaming the Monster energy drink. But, you know, a lot of people say like, oh, I don't even know what day it is. It's like, bro, fucko, you know what day it is, right? Like, I know it's Monday, okay? But I am not clear-headed today as we recap UFC 241. Ray Longo coming up in about 25 minutes. No main event challenge today, obviously, because this crazy stretch of nine UFC weekends in a row is over. So it'll be a quick rip today, probably about 45 minutes. But certainly UFC 241 gave us a lot to talk about. I think Chael Sonnen has a little bit of a recency bias when he says it's the greatest show in UFC history. But it is certainly, I think, top 10 for a lot of people. And Nate Diaz is a big reason why. But in the nature of time, we are going to lead with Daniel Cormier and Stipe Miocic, the heavyweight championship rematch. 13 months in the making. And it goes to Stipe. Ken Flo, I thought DC won the first three rounds. And despite what some fans think, it's not because he's my buddy. I have a very good, close personal relationship with Stipe Miocic as well. But I thought DC had banked three rounds. Obviously, in round four, Stipe kind of flipped the script a little bit, goes to the body. That was the beginning of the end for DC. Then it was a right hand up top. DC crumbles. And just like that, this heavyweight division spins on a dime. These two men and their heavyweight legacies kind of spins on a dime. Your thoughts, and we'll take as many of them as you have on Stipe DC Act 2.
Well, I don't think you're wrong about DC winning those first three rounds. However, it was the way that he won them which was most concerning to me. The first round I thought was pretty flawless from DC overall. I thought that's the way he should have fought him. There was an emotional connection to the fight that I saw in DC that he just never seemed comfortable, even as he was winning these rounds, which was why it was such a concern. And Joe Rogan very intelligently pointed it out, saying that, am I winning this fight or am I losing this fight? Even DC himself, even while he was winning, wasn't sure of that. The reason for that is even though he was winning, he was still taking a lot of big shots. Now, these are heavyweights. That's what we need to understand. These are heavyweights that are basically in DC. He was just walking forward, pressuring, but you got to pressure in the right way. He was just eating shots and basically trading three for two repeatedly. Stipe Miocic is a proper heavyweight, man. This guy is massive, and getting hit with 4-ounce gloves is very real, and it becomes even more real when you're doing it in the heavyweight division. So it seemed like it was something that DC wasn't going to be able to sustain over the course of five rounds, which is why he slowed down in the fourth round. Was moving a lot more, was kind of trying to back up and evade a little bit more against Stipe. And then as he came forward, he started eating those shots again, but wasn't landing as many shots as he was early in the fight.
So you hit on a lot of things there, and I'll go back to the emotional connection first, because this was really the first time for Daniel that he had had an emotional connection for a fight that wasn't a John Jones fight. And there was a much different emotional underbelly to this rematch than there was to the first meeting between Cormier and Stipe, because Stipe and his team largely denigrated that first DC win in this series and said it was fluky and used words like lottery and lucky punch and everything else. So DC wanted this one in the worst way. And I think he brought his family because he had visions of retiring and bringing them all in there after he had knocked Stipe out. He would be the first to admit, I think, a point that you made, and he sort of did so at the post-fight press conference, failing to realize that there is cumulative damage from these strikes from Stipe early on, despite the fact that maybe they don't hurt and you seem to be moving well with them.
Right.
He obviously was blind to that, and he paid the ultimate price. In terms of his reluctance to wrestle, I know in talking to Bob Cook after the fact, there were some training obstacles, you know, couldn't kick for the first 2 weeks. You know, he had a little bit of reluctance to wrestle because of his back and the nature of the training camp. And again, we're not going to sit here and make excuses, but you can be sure the training camp that DC was able to put in before the first meeting with Stipe was an entirely different beast of a camp than this one. All of that being said, your thoughts on why he only chose to go for the takedown once when he was able to control Miocic on the ground when he did?
You know, I'm not quite sure. I really don't know. I think if DC is close enough to be able to hit you, why isn't DC going in for these takedowns, especially when he found that success in round one? I'm not sure if it was a back issue. It was something where at the point he realized he was supposed to take him down, he was just too tired at that point. I don't know exactly why he wasn't doing that. That was a tool that I thought he should have been using throughout this fight against Stipe Miocic. You know, I think he was the faster man, and he had a lot of success early on, and I thought that, you know, maybe he continued to try to be that guy and be first, right, like his corner was telling him. But that is not what you do. You know, anytime I see hear a boxing coach or an MMA corner say, just be first out there. Guess what? If you're in the middle and you're trading with someone out there, you're going to get hit too. It's not that easy. Yeah. That isn't a strategy, be first. Where was the defensive maneuvering? Yes, they were telling him to keep his hands up, but he's still in the line of fire. These are, again, little 4-ounce gloves. Your hands being up isn't going to be enough. You got to be able to stick and move your feet, create angles. And again, in the heavyweight division, this is that much more important. And I don't think there's any heavyweight who truly knows how to do it. They're all just banging away, which is why you're going to see the belt change hands so many times in that division.
Right. And I do believe that the prime time for this heavyweight division was actually not necessarily in the UFC all told, but Pride and everything else, when a lot of our listeners were not mixed martial arts fans, right?
Right.
The TJ DeSantis days, right? 2004, 2005, 2006. And we're not going to have a great conversation about the greatest heavyweight of all time today, I can assure you, but we'll dip into it a little bit when we focus on the Stipe side. But yeah, you hit on a number of great things as far as Cormier and the strategy is concerned. I believe in the first John Jones fight, DC kind of took round four off, and he acknowledged this time around at the post-fight press conference, maybe subconsciously, he was trying to preserve himself for round five. You can't take 20% of the fight off, especially against someone like Stipe.
Without a doubt. And why do you have to do that? Because you're so exhausted. There was no way
from the approach,
that any heavyweight was going to sustain that kind of pacing. And again, it told me, it indicated that DC was just way too emotionally invested in this fight, that he was fighting with something to prove, that he had to keep this pace. And the fact that when you don't know exactly, the rounds were semi-close, but to me, I thought it was pretty clear that he was winning. But to me, it seemed like there was chaos going on in his head, that he wasn't even aware of what he was doing so much.
Yeah.
He was just throwing shot after shot and walking forward into shots repeatedly, which was why he was kind of confused of whether he was winning or not. You know, there wasn't this presence of mind which you see in a lot of the great fighters in these championship fights, like, you know, the Conor McGregors or the Khabibs or the John Jones, of course. I get this feeling that John Jones was watching this fight going, these guys aren't at my level. I'm sorry, but John Jones is such a smart fighter. You can see that he truly utilizes his MMA IQ when he's out there fighting. He's playing chess and everyone else is just playing checkers. Throwing punches in the pocket is very entertaining for us. It provided a lot of action here for UFC 241, and we should all be happy about that, that it definitely entertained.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it's true MMA intelligence at UFC 241, in my opinion.
So one of the first things DC said to us in our fighter meeting on Thursday was that he expected a longer fight, which wasn't going out on a limb. But he also said that he expected Stipe Miocic's chin to be refreshed after 13 months away from the game. Because the first time these guys fought, Kenny, it was 5 or 6 months after Stipe had fought Francis Ngannou. And even though most people remember that as a ground fight and a Stipe domination, he still absorbed big shots on the feet. He had a grueling schedule leading up to that point in time. So I do believe Stipe's chin was refreshed. But to hear DC say it and then not respect the fact that Stipe's chin could be refreshed kind of surprised me. Now, Stipe absorbed a lot of shots, and I promise you we're going to start showing Stipe some love here, but we're going sort of back to front. Stipe ate a lot of big shots from Cormier, and it just seemed like DC thought eventually he was going to be able to stun him or knock him down and follow up, but that opportunity never materialized. So let us get to Stipe right now. So instead of being 4-2 in UFC heavyweight championship fights, Stipe Miocic is now 5-1. This was his fifth win in a UFC heavyweight championship fight, and this has got to be far and away, other than maybe when he won the belt, the most satisfying win of his mixed martial arts career. And it really isn't even about the belt. It's about proving that that last result would have been in a 10-fight series not the norm. And that was really what Stipe and his camp have been saying repeatedly. And he had a shitty start, obviously, first two, you know, he had some moments in round two, but I think Stipe would be the first to admit that he was probably down. And he was down, I believe, on all three judges' scorecards, 30-27. What a warrior, though. Just what an absolute warrior. What a tough Ohio individual. And I just have a lot of respect for the way he was able to mentally keep his head in the game. He said he saw something on Instagram within the last 24 hours where DC was doing some routine with Rosendo Sanchez and the body was wide open, and something kind of dawned on Stipe in the middle of the fight. I don't know that his coaches deserve much credit for it. This seemed to be a realization by Stipe that attacking the body might bear fruit, and it certainly did.
It always will, especially when you get these big heavyweight shots coming at you. And I think that Stipe, you know, I think he made some decent adjustments in the fight, but I think you said it best. This defined him as one of the true heavyweight warriors in this sport. And I think that for Stipe, it came down to heart of who was the tougher guy.
Yeah.
Which is impressive as hell, man. Stipe is an absolute warrior. And so is DC for that matter. But you know, when you're trading shots like that, you know, you kind of had to favor Stipe. If that was his kind of fight, I think, to win, and DC played right into his hands. For me, though, you know, I think you're right. Stipe didn't have the best of starts because he wasn't fighting like the taller, longer man. He wasn't utilizing his long-range weapons. He was not moving his feet after he landed a shot, and he was right there for DC to counter. When you have that much of a height and reach advantage, you got to move your feet. You got to be the guy that leads the dance, that sticks those shots and gets out of the way. And we didn't see that elusiveness from Stipe. Stipe was landing his shots and planting his feet right there. And that's why DC was so sad. But once DC started slowing down and started backing up in the fourth round, that's when Stipe really came to life and started picking DC apart.
So you referenced the heart, and Henry Cejudo, who made his analyst debut on ESPN, he kept saying, you know, they're both really good fighters, but DC's the better competitor, and I think that's what's going to prevail at the end of the day. And to your point, Stipe proved that he really is right there in terms of heart of a lion type stuff, if you will, you know, that he is willing to dig deep and certainly was. And Stipe just wanted this one in the worst of ways for legacy, and he certainly gets it. And you know, I'm happy for him. I really am. I mean, he really is a decent, classy guy who has always been consistent with me. And certainly there's an emotional investment for me with Cormier because he is my friend and broadcast partner and yours. And it's not hard to separate that when doing the job. But I'm certainly sad for DC, and some of that is muted by the fact that I'm happy for a guy who really proved his mettle over the weekend in Stipe Miocic.
Without a doubt. Listen, and I do think that DC is such an amazing competitor. This is a guy who has done every single thing you can do in the sport. But I think the difference is Stipe is this guy who has proven himself repeatedly in these crazy wars time and time again. And if it got nasty, if it got dirty, I liked Stipe's chances for that to do that, for him to win the fight in that manner. DC is the guy that needs to be the more technical guy. He's the guy who needs to utilize his brain. He's the guy who needs to be slicker. And I think over time, he allowed Stipe to come to life because of that. And he couldn't sustain the pace. And once he was backing up, it just allowed Stipe to just completely take over. Kudos to Stipe for winning this fight. It was so hard to see DC lose, but Stipe really is a class act, man. He's a guy that definitely deserves to be a world champion again in this sport. And these guys just showed so much heart and class.
And props to you for all of this analysis this morning. And I know it's not easy because if you don't know the history between DC and Ken Flo, Cormier really leaned on Kenny at times and trusts Kenny's fight IQ and acumen to the nth degree. And I think were DC to be an Anakin Florian podcast listener, a lot of the last 15 minutes would be hard things for him to hear, despite some of those truths.
And it's tough. It's tough, man. I absolutely love DC like a brother. This is a guy that I always get nervous before his fights. I have so much respect for the guy. This guy is a true gentleman, an amazing father and husband, an amazing coach, a guy that will be successful no matter what. But when I see a certain path that could have been a lot easier for him to take, when I see a strategy that I feel was kind of a failure, it's hard. And I do want to give that honest assessment the best that I can, because I do know that DC is capable of much more. And that's what's so hard for me. And again, when I'm criticizing any fighter, whether it's DC or anything like that, I'm giving my honest assessment. I don't have a bias. You know, it's funny when I give a criticism of a fighter, oh, that's because you hate him. Right. I'm giving an honest assessment here of DC. I fucking love the guy. I would trust him with my life. It's just, again, it is hard for me to say that. I wish DC took an easier approach. Even if he won this fight, I would have been really nervous the whole time.
It was really hard to see his kids, Junior and Marquita, walking out of that octagon balling. And I know the family spent the day at Disneyland yesterday, and I was texting with DC's assistant, Cassandra, and he seemed to be having a pretty good time and putting on a happy face for his children. So hopefully he'll emerge out the other side. And I think big picture, when you talk about DC's legacy, and he can do anything in television and broadcasting that he wants to do. It doesn't even have to be related to combat sports at all.
Yes.
But I think when he gets some time to distance himself from this, this will be sort of a blip on his legacy, especially if he doesn't run it back with Stipe and end his career with two consecutive losses. In terms of what is next for Daniel Cormier, and time permitting, we'll get to Stipe, who will probably defend this belt against either Francis Ngannou, DC, or maybe even John Jones next. But for DC, Kenny, he didn't want to look at his Wikipedia page, and you're in the same boat, okay? Ken Flo, if I can speak for you, you guys didn't want to look at your Wikipedia page while you got your feet up in retirement, see a bunch of red at the end of your career. Right.
Absolutely.
You retired, obviously, because of a back injury, but you could have hung on and beat 80% of the division. You know, DC can hang on and beat most of the guys in the world for sure. But he doesn't want to look at his Wikipedia page and have it look like Rashad Evans, for example, you know. And to that end, I do think Daniel Cormier is going to retire. I think he would love to complete this trilogy with Stipe. I'm sure he's getting $2 or $3 million to show at this point in time, almost regardless of opponent.
Yeah.
But I think for Daniel, because he is such the unique case of career after opportunities, that I just don't know that he needs the cash grab. And if he doesn't, Kenny, it's not that I would like to see him retire. I just think he is going to retire because he wants to preserve his legacy and not put it at further risk against the best heavyweights in the world.
And he's 40 years old, right? He's 40 years old. He's had a ton of injuries. This is a guy who's been fighting throughout a ton of injuries and a ton of bumps and bruises throughout training camps. And the way that DC trains, he puts so much into it. I don't think he has anything left to prove, right? I mean, no. The guy has done it all in this sport. This guy's an Olympian. He's an absolute stud. He has a huge career ahead of him on television to be an excellent mentor and analyst for many years.
Yeah.
This is the kind of guy that we want representing our sport. And I think he wants to be a great father, a great husband, a great wrestling coach now. So go ahead and be that mentor, DC. You've done it all, man. There's nothing left for you to prove. You're a warrior down to your core. Enjoy retirement if that's what he wants to do. Again, I know it's tempting to want to get this one back, and I do believe that he can come back and beat Stipe Miocic.
Right.
As difficult as it would be, there's no doubt in my mind that DC can go out there and win that fight. But I don't think there's anything left to prove, man, especially after such a crazy fight like that. More importantly, what's more difficult than anything, I don't care about you seeing a friend lose or anything like that's going to happen in this sport. But seeing a friend take damage, that's what gets me emotional, and that's what makes me upset, and that's why I'm a little critical of the performance.
Sure. And I do believe that he is going to step away. Henry Cejudo and I have a little bit of a side wager because Cejudo thinks without a shadow of a doubt that he's coming back. And I wouldn't necessarily be surprised to see DC accept a trilogy fight with Stipe with the mentality that he was going to see how his body got through training camp. And if it responded in the manner in which he liked, then he would go through with the fight. But I do believe that a big part of Daniel would like to step away for a lot of the reasons that you outlined. And there's no doubt his legacy is entrenched and one of the greatest in UFC history. And I do believe the John Jones fight went away this weekend. I mean, do you believe that if DC does return, the only fight really is to run it back a third time with Stipe? Or do you still think that there's still an outside chance that John Jones fight was preserved despite this result over the weekend?
I'm sure the UFC would like to see that fight.
Right, right.
You know, that's a big money fight, always has been for them. I would not like to see that fight against John Jones. I don't think it's necessary, especially with John Jones really pushing for that fight to be at 205 pounds. I think that is a huge advantage for John Jones with that fight being at light heavyweight. I don't need to see that. And I don't need to see the Stipe Miocic rematch either. The trilogy fight, I don't need to see that. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how DC approaches this. The more difficult thing, it's kind of easier to make a decision right after a fight. The problem is a couple months removed from the fight when you start going, I feel pretty good. That loss starts to sting you a little more. That's what concerns me for DC, especially when the phone starts ringing and they start talking about dollar signs. So DC has enough money. He has preserved a tremendous legacy, one of the best in the sport. He will go down as one of the best in the sport. And I just don't think it's necessary.
And I think a lot of people, too, would like to see Stipe at some point start to preserve that chin a little bit. He's probably looking at a Francis Ngannou rematch as his next title defense. But big picture, there is no denying Stipe's UFC legacy. And sometimes when we say things like he's the most accomplished UFC heavyweight or the most decorated UFC heavyweight of all time, people think we're saying he's the greatest of all time. I'm not trying to have the greatest of all time conversation, but on the merits of his UFC body of work, no heavyweight has accomplished more than Stipe Miocic, and we congratulate him and his family on a huge weekend, and hopefully Cormier can feel better in a few days than he does here on Monday morning. All right, Longo coming up here in about 5 minutes, but I want to get your thoughts quickly on Nate Diaz's return against Anthony Showtime Pettis. Unanimous decision win for Nathan Diaz, 30-27 times 2, 29-28 from the lone dissenting judge. I thought Mike Beltran was going to stop this fight in the third round. A lot of different layers to it. Pettis's broken foot absolutely is a part of the narrative, but just have so much respect for the work that Diaz does as a lifelong martial artist, the lifestyle that he preserves. And you know this, you guys have mutual friends, but the untold story is that Nathan Diaz is going into these boxing training camps for 6 weeks, helping some of the best boxers in the world while everyone thinks he's just sitting on a couch smoking weed. And he showed you that he can come back after 1,000 days away, and his style still translates very much so in 2019.
Yeah, and not to mention he's training like he's a professional triathlete year-round, too.
Of course,
this guy never takes days off, and I never got that either. Oh, I'm going into training camp. What the hell does that mean? You should be training all the time.
Right.
Nate Diaz, you don't get it twisted. You know, he talks like he's a gangster and all that stuff, you know, or he says he's a gangster. This guy's a martial artist, really,
no
at
doubt.
His core.
No,
this guy loves training martial arts and learning how to fight. And this guy truly knows how to do that. He is as tough as any UFC fighter that has ever existed. Just a brilliant performance for him. And again, if you saw the fight between Tony Ferguson and Anthony Pettis, that's the blueprint, right? RDA, the same thing. You pressure him. You back him up. When you're pressuring and you're backing someone up, you take away a lot of their ability to kick. And we talked about Anthony Pettis having to kind of throw that leg kick and move out of the way. I thought I was going to see an Anthony Pettis that was going to be able to move better laterally. And he just didn't show that. For a guy who's as athletic and moves as well as Anthony Pettis, his footwork is just flawed. And Nate Diaz did a great job of cornering him, cutting off the cage repeatedly, utilizing the long reach, and just making him suffer up against that cage, man, whether it was clinch work with knees, short shots to the body, short uppercuts and hooks.
Yeah.
This guy was absolutely relentless. And I tell you what, everyone talks about the conditioning and all that stuff, but if you're moving forward, right, would you rather be the guy who's moving forward throwing shots or the guy who's moving backward throwing shots? Who do you think's going to hit harder?
Right.
So Nate Diaz was going to win that fight all day if Anthony Pettis wasn't able to move laterally. And
right.
He got trapped up against the cage like he's done so many times in his career, and he got murdered in there against
right.
Nate Diaz.
And I know you mentioned some of the footwork is flawed. You think the broken foot, though, probably didn't help matters.
Without a doubt. And I don't know exactly when that happened, but
right.
Broken foot or not, this is something that Anthony
of
Pettis
course.
has struggled with throughout. And you know, he gets a little flat-footed sometimes, and because he is fast and because he is landing shots, he kind of sits and trades and watches his work. You just can't do that against Nate Diaz, who you know is going to be the busier fighter. This guy does not stop throwing shots. I love the mixing up of his stances. I think that really threw Anthony Pettis off as well, which took away his leg kicks. That was a little confusing because we don't see that too much from Nate Diaz. So the fact that Nate Diaz came in with some new tricks up his sleeve was awesome to see.
We have said on these airwaves over the last 3 years, as we have bided our time waiting for a Nate Diaz return, that we believe the internal metrics are pretty strong for Nate Diaz, that he can headline a pay-per-view on his own, that on the strength of those two fights with Conor McGregor, that he is on the short list, 3-4 names of the biggest superstars in the sport. And with respect to Stipe and DC and Yoel Romero and Paulo Costa and Anthony Showtime Pettis, the reason we were sold out at Honda Center was Nate Diaz, right? Everywhere we went, Diaz was the story in Anaheim during fight week. And, dude, I mean, I thought, you know, you do a California show, you walk in, usually the arena smells like weed. Didn't smell like weed Saturday night until Nate walked out. It was like everybody was saving their vape pens and whatever their smoking devices were until Nate Diaz made that walk. And no sooner does Diaz walk, I'm getting a fucking secondhand high before the co-main event.
Their vape pens and their marijuana cigarettes.
Cigarettes.
It was awesome. First of all, the crowd really came to life. And you could feel the energy. That's what really you could tell. You could tell when a special fighter is walking out is when the crowd is just popping and on their feet. They went nuts when he came out there.
Yeah.
And just seeing Nate Diaz shadow box on his way to the octagon was an awesome sight to see. The UFC needs guys like Nate Diaz. This is a guy who has always delivered action-packed fights. He's been away for 3 years. This was a Nate Diaz that was even sharper because, you know, if there's one fault on Nate Diaz is that he tends to do the same things over and over again. And when you do the same things over and over again, doesn't mean you're not a great fighter, because he is, but
right.
You become a little bit more predictable. This was a Nate Diaz who came in with some new tricks up his sleeve. He was throwing that kick down the middle, which was awesome. He was switching his stances. I loved it. What a performance from Nate Diaz. This dude is a G for sure. And to make things even better, he called out the best fighter for him to fight. That is a money fight. Him and Jorge Masvidal, West Coast versus East Coast. Nate Diaz is not only a brilliant fighter, he's a brilliant promoter. Wow.
That's the matchup right there. And I flew out to L.A. with Jorge Gamebred Masvidal. And even before this fight had happened on Wednesday, he said, Nate wants to fight me. So he knew beforehand that this is probably what was going to happen. So apologies to Leon Edwards, but it looks as though this is going to be the fight. And I will say, too, before we get to Longo, Nate Diaz may have bailed on Media Day. But, you know, I do these post shows now for ESPN Plus after the pay-per-views. This dude waited on set for 10 minutes while I got my fat ass up there and gave us 8 minutes of live television. So he's turned a lot of corners. And it's amazing to think at times he was booed walking out. It's hard for me to envision a scenario whereby this man is booed in any arena worldwide anymore, especially after what we saw on Saturday night. All right. You know, Ray Longo watched this fight card. He was texting me all night. He's excited to talk about it. Let us get to the Ray Longo Minute.
It's now time for the Ray Longo Minute.
I want you to punch a hole in his fucking chest. That's what I want.
The Ray Longo Minute. Starring Ray Longo. The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast.
Oh, nothing makes me happier, Ken Flo, than when I get those Ray Longo texts at the broadcast booth. The great Ray Longo now joins us live. Raymond Peter, good morning.
Good morning. Let me tell you, I think my heart is still beating in those fights.
Oh.
This is what I love about the UFC. When you get name value, like all name values we can all relate to, we know, we followed them, and they all come and produce like that, that's what makes it great to me. I mean, it was like 40 minutes straight of just nonstop action. It was unbelievable. I think what a great night for the UFC. And you know, to my point, like the fights before that were good, but like there were a couple of unknown names in there, and they're good fights, but nothing makes it like when you get a Diaz against a Pettis or a Romero against a young up-and-coming kid. We all want to see what's going to happen. DC rematch. Big names, big producers. They all pull through, and I think that's what made it great to me, in my opinion.
Yeah. No, big names is really the rub, right? Because this was a night that a lot of people glorify as one of the best in UFC history, and yet it began with six consecutive decisions, right? So us broadcasters are like, dude, I mean, saying to the truck, you guys got a finish for us in there? But so before we get to DC and Stipe, I just want to bring up Paulo Costa and Yoel Romero because this is one of my favorite fights, three-round fights that I've ever seen. I walked up to Sean Shelby, Ray, after the fact, and I said, you know, congratulations on that fight and making sure it happened, because this was like a 2-year initiative for these matchmakers to try to put this fight together, because Dana and Mick and Sean just knew that this thing was bulletproof and would produce gold, and man, did it. Your thoughts on a middleweight fight there between Costa and Yoel Romero?
I put it as one of the best fights I've ever seen, and more for the fact that, look, there's a lot of ingredients in there. First off, this other guy being 42 years old and being able to withstand the barrage, the attacks that this young kid had for him, I got the utmost respect for the guy. I mean, I thought he took some big shots, and he managed to stay in there. He made a comeback in the third round. I think the right guy won, but it was a close fight. But I think, you know, Costa was always going forward, and I think the body kicks, the head kicks, the combination, the body punches, the up and down. I thought he did a great job against a really tough guy who's a piece of granite at this point. I mean, I don't know what keeps him up, but it takes two to make a fight, and he was rolling punches, but man, he would explode. You know, it was drum. You didn't know who was going down. You know, those are the fights that keep you at the end of your couch when, you know, it's going one guy's way, and then there's like a flash knockdown, the other guy's coming back. It's crazy, man. But what a great fight for the fans, and what a great fight for both of those guys.
It was like two He-Man dolls going at it. For those that know what a He-Man doll is, I'm not sure if our listeners know what a He-Man doll is, but that's pretty much what it was.
Exactly. Kenny, if I admit to even knowing what a He-Man doll is, my stock will plummet. I don't even know what you're talking about, but we'll go with it. But I think it was technical too, though. It wasn't like a lot of people like those fights. It's just two sloppy guys killing each other. This was different.
Ray,
this was a really good fight.
And Ray, do you think that it seems like Yoel Romero tends to fight a more relaxed pace. He likes more of a chill fight where he can kind of float around and then kind of explode into a combination. And Paulo Costa just kept it a fast-paced fight repeatedly, which never gave Romero a rest. And I think ultimately that's what kind of lost the fight for Romero. Romero just couldn't get his typical rhythm going. Do you agree?
I agree 120%. I mean, nobody has put a pace like that on this guy with the volume and the accuracy and just the intensity of the striking. You know what I mean? So you're right. He was, and that's what impressed me about Romero. He did kind of adjust. I didn't think he was making it through that fight, and he did. You know what I mean? So he did. I mean, I as a 42-year-old guy, I think that's amazing.
Unreal.
I really do. I mean, it would have been amazing as a 30-year-old, but I'm saying the older you get, I'm partial to the older guys still fighting, I guess. But I got to tell you, man, he did a great job in taking a situation that I don't think he was used to. I thought Costa was going to have a little more respect for him. He just went right in there. He didn't give a shit. I mean, what a great fight. I agree with you. I mean, really agree with you. 120%, Kenny, and I got to say that Romero didn't fold.
No,
he found a way to survive and make a comeback. Incredible fight for a
really
lot of reasons.
Incredible. Yeah, Dominic Cruz's favorite fighter, Yoel Romero. It is not hard to see why. Let us re-rack the main event though with you now, Ray Longo. Your guy Stipe got it done in a big way, and there are so many different angles we could go with this, right? I don't know how much time you have. We did 20 minutes on just this fight off the top. But I guess on the Stipe side, for Kenny and for me, I think a big part of our takeaway is that he really is just the ultimate competitor. And in a fight that he wanted in the worst way, he had to lean on his heart. He was disgusted with himself through the first 12 minutes or so, but switched up the strategy, not necessarily thanks to his coaches. It seemed like this was an adjustment he made on his own. And in terms of his legacy, this is just a huge win. And I have to think the most satisfying singular win of his career.
Well, you know, there's guys that, you know, when they want that rematch, you don't believe them. But Stipe, I really believe, wanted this more than anything. Like, he, at the very base of everything, in hindsight, and this is in hindsight, Stipe wanted it more. That's at the, just in, like, again, it's in hindsight, but you kind of knew it. He was driven. He took a beating. He, fourth round, he finds a way to come back with those liver shots. So what I loved about that is he didn't just hit him once. He was going to hit that liver until that guy made an adjustment, and he never did.
Right.
You know, like, I almost think, like, if DC would have kept with the leg kicks, like, he hit him with some good leg kicks, that fight would have been different. He was hurting Stipe's leg, and he just abandons it. He doesn't go back to it anymore, you know? But, you know, the telling thing to me was after the second round, this was really confusing, and DC is in that corner, and they're giving him, so I couldn't really hear what they were saying, but he looks up and he looks like he's lost. He goes, am I losing? I'm like, just pummeled the guy for two rounds. And I remember, I text my buddy because we go back and forth, and I go, he's losing this fight. Wow. He's going to lose. I just couldn't, like, you're not here. Like, if you're talking like that, you're not here. Like, I don't know what I've never seen that before. You just pick the guy up over your head, threw him on his head, and you're asking if you're losing the fight.
Right. Like, man, I'm glad you brought that up. That's wild. And it's funny because Stipe looked very checked out after round one, but then you got Stipe turned, and he you could see it in his eyes when all of a sudden he checked back in. But you're right, Ray.
Stipe's a blue-collar, immigrant, grinding cocksucker, man. He's that guy you got to kill.
You really do.
And that's what you saw.
He's a tough prick.
That's what you saw. He could have broke a lot of times in that fight, but that guy's he's just a good dude. I tell you, he's a simple guy who's just, you know, he's got a great wife. He's going to enjoy his. I just hope he gets out of this thing, you know, intact, because I think he did take some big shots, but he's just a grinding big guy, man, who just, you're right. He found a way. Like, again, when he found that liver, Kenny, he wasn't going away. But see, that was a fight too. There was a lot of fights that I missed Trevor Whitman. I think, look, Trevor, I think, does a great job in a hard situation. because he's got to see everybody, and he does a really good job. I think he started out slow, but he really has come into himself, where I think he really does a fucking fantastic job when he's analyzing the course. But I was waiting to hear what he was saying after the DC thing, and I didn't realize I guess he wasn't there. Am I right with that? Or
right, he's only there for select ESPN shows, so not the pay-per-view.
Oh, I got you.
You're right, though. That coach's perspective is only a part of it. Kenny, the other thing is that when you're on a headset and you're not charged with providing wall-to-wall commentary and you can just pick your moments to chime in, you can ingest everything, Flo, that's happening around you. You're not dealing with television producers and replays and all of the things that we're dealing with. And I think that helps him maximize those minutes.
100%. What I wanted to ask, I wasn't able to see the earlier fights, but were they interviewing the corner in between rounds? Was that the thing they tried this time around?
Yeah, they do it in boxing. It was a little bit of an ESPN initiative.
Seemed a little hectic.
Yeah.
Ray, what do you think about that? Ray, what do you think about? Would you talk to someone in between while your fight's going on? Would you talk to someone who's interviewing you? That's ridiculous.
I tell you exactly. If you can't stand it, I think it's disruptive. You have to concentrate. I'm so dialed in, I don't want to start talking to anybody. You know what I mean? If I'm talking to Matt, I don't even look at him. I'm talking while I'm looking at the fight and just mentioning quick things. Like, guys, I don't want to talk to some, I don't want a mic in my face.
I find it awkward for NFL coaches at halftime, let alone during a fight. Like, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Well, and in boxing, you have 12 3-minute rounds. It's a totally different sport. In MMA, it's just like Elliot Marshall was being interviewed in Corey Sandhagen's corner, and Christian Allen, who's sitting next to him, no fucking way Christian Allen is doing that interview right during a Corey Sandhagen round, right? They have worked 10 years to build this kid into the greatest bantamweight in the world. These are precious rounds. Like, I ain't got time for your microphone.
Plus, guys, you know this as well as I don't know about anybody, but we all mic'd up. Not that, you know, Sarah needs a mic, because I always have the mic on. You can hear him over me. He doesn't even have a mic on. And you have a camera staring you right in the face. Like, what else do you want? You know what I mean? You have cameras that you could move all over the place. They do that, and they go into the corner. That's a little different. Like, you're being yourself, and you're being filmed. You know what I mean? That's totally different than somebody sticking a mic in your face and wanting to talk again. That's no good. I just hope they get rid of it, and I hope they don't force anybody to do it, because that's, I don't know, not a good thing. I don't see how that benefits anybody.
What were your thoughts on Nate Diaz and Anthony Showtime Pettis?
I loved it. I think Nate Diaz is, if you're going to fight his type of fight, man, it's going to be hard to beat him. You know, I mean, he broke down a guy that has really good striking, but Nate loves to fight. He's always, you know, he always comes in with the right attitude, and he's always in shape, and he just, you know, his ability to withstand punishment and keep throwing back is just phenomenal. And he's pretty accurate. He's long. You know, if there was any questions about who had better jiu-jitsu, I think it was answered. I'm happy for the guy. I think he's a real dude. I think even his call out of Masvidal was heartfelt, and he respects the guy. You know, like when he says everybody else, he means it. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
He's not saying everybody does. He's recognizing another badass. You know what I mean? And those are the fights people want to see. I mean, that's a really tough fight. You know, so I give him credit. I loved it. I loved it. Yeah. And I like Anthony Pettis. Nothing to do with, obviously, I like Duke Rufus and that whole camp, and they're always gracious. But there's something about a guy 3-year layoff and who he lives to fight. That guy, he embraces it. There's no stress. There's, you know, like I had a guy one time, I took him to a fight. He's sniffling. He didn't want to fight. You know what I mean? Like, he got a little cold. And then I go, but if you had, you know, if Jay-Z was playing at the Barclays Center, you going with this cold? Like, you're going.
Right.
Because you want to see that. If you wanted to really fight, you're fine. You know, nothing's stopping you. Like, it would have to be really bad. You know what I mean? So Nate is that guy. He loves it. I believe him and Nick love it. I think, you know, why Quinta loves it. I think Masvidal love these guys that are fighters, man. And these are the guys, man, that go in there and they throw it on the line. They're not really, they're just going to go win the fight. Not really concerned with the win or loss. Obviously, everybody wants to win, but they enjoy the process more than anybody.
All right, last thing. We got about 60 seconds in terms of where Stipe goes from here. He is 37 years old as of today, by the way. So happy birthday to Stipe. But yeah, I would love to see him get a couple more big paychecks and sort of slide out of this thing, right? His legacy really holds up after he avenges this Cormier loss. I think it's probably going to be a rematch with Francis Ngannou or a trilogy with DC, maybe an outside chance that they do the John Jones fight for Stipe. But you know this guy personally. I mean, you don't want to see him take too many big shots
for five years, right? Here's my deal. I think he's got a great life in Ohio. He's got an awesome wife. He just had a kid. I mean, he's got things right where he wants them to be. Like, again, he's a blue-collar guy. He's not the guy he's going to buy, you know, start buying Bentleys and lose his money and, you know, acting stupid. This is a good dude, man. This is a grassroots, salt-of-the-earth type of guy. I say whatever benefits his health in the long run and his family, that's the route I'm picking for this guy because I think he deserves it. He's going to go down as the greatest heavyweight right now. He's got nothing to prove. This was a huge win for him. And I want to see him healthy and happy with his family, me personally.
Yeah, I agree. All right, man. Great stuff. Thank you.
Like again, that's a crazy division, John. So you got to be careful. But, you know, he's a competitor, so we'll see what happens.
All right, buddy. Appreciate your insights. Your homework for next week. We'd like to have Aljamain Sterling as part of the Ray Longo Minute because I got a lot of questions for that guy spending a lot of time with Triple C this weekend. I got my Cejudo, Phil.
How long did that take? 10 seconds? How long did it take? Seriously, how long did it take to get your fill of that guy? You don't have to say because you see him all the time.
I don't have to say because we got to go. We got to go, Ray.
Between 5 and 20 seconds, I'm guessing, Kenny. Now, I love the guy. I think he's hysterical. I love the transgender thing. I think the guy's awesome. But, yeah, let's talk with Alger. Right? There's a lot of unknowns with that. Crazy stuff going on.
We'll talk next week, and I believe it's intergender, if I'm not mistaken.
Transgender. Oh, man. God forbid.
See, you're so politically correct.
Enjoy
New York, and we will see you. We'll see you shortly, and we'll talk to you next Monday, buddy. Thank you.
All right. Take it easy, guys.
See you, Ray.
Is Ray Longo every week here on the Anakin Florian podcast. Ken Flo, Paulo Costa, Yoel Romero, unanimous decision for Costa. Again, you throw out the commentator scorecard, but I did think he did enough to win the first two rounds, and I thought Costa won the fight. Even if you didn't think that Costa won the fight, I do like in a close fight, to Longo's point, to see the fighter who advances get rewarded when it's hard to score rounds, and Romero advanced 13% of the time. It was like 48% for Paulo Costa. Any thoughts on that epic fight, the scorecards, or anything else?
You know, obviously I had picked Romero. After watching the fight, you know, I think that Costa did enough, or at least in the eyes of people watching from cage side as one of the judges during that time. If you see a guy moving forward, landing shots, stopping takedowns, even if you're kind of missing, you know, you're not going to be able to have the advantage of looking at it on the monitor or seeing the replays. It looked like Romero was getting caught and getting overwhelmed at times. I didn't think he was active enough. I didn't think he moved his feet enough. He was backing himself up against the cage, like a lot of people would against that kind of pressure from Costa. Costa was just firing away with hard shots repeatedly, not landing so clean all the time. But again, if you're cage side looking at that, to me, it looked like Costa won the fight.
Yeah. And just can't say enough things in terms of the respect for Yoel Romero in defeat. I am truly in awe of that man and excited to see what the 28-year-old Paulo Costa can do here moving forward. You can be sure he's going to be in Melbourne, whether he's paying his own way or otherwise, to be front and center when Robert Whittaker fights Israel Adesanya. All right, I'm going to shout out some other winners on the way out while also telling you that because we do not have a live UFC event this weekend, we're going to try to hop on Instagram Live and sort of continue this UFC 241 recap at some point later in the week. But I just want to shout out a few guys. Sadiq Youssef, big win over Gabriel Benitez. I love the fact that he's really going for it. And maybe leaning on the entertainment side and not always the technical side. And it certainly worked out for him over the weekend. Congrats to him. Real patient effort out of Derek Brunson as he gets past Ian Heinisch as betting underdog. Real nice call on Brunson, by the way, for Ken Flo at plus 150. Corey Sandhagen, we don't have time to get into him today. We will later in the week, but undeniably a real bantamweight threat. Kama Worthy as a plus 650 underdog becomes the biggest betting underdog to cash in the UFC here in 2019. If you had Kama Worthy against Devontae Smith by round one knockout, that was a 20-1 prop. Ken, quick thought. I've never called you Ken before. I don't even know if that's allowed, but a quick thought on Kama Worthy, Devontae Smith, not the fight itself, right? But for Devontae Smith, he was supposed to fight John McDessie. Then it was Clay Collard. Instead, he fights Kama Worthy, who is his good friend. Like, they're good buddies. Now, they hadn't trained together in a couple years, but if you saw the footage of Devontae Smith on Dana White's Contender Series, the guy holding mitts for him in that B-roll is Kama Worthy. And so for Kama coming into the UFC, he had a fight July 27th. 6 days ago, he was outside the UFC looking in. For him to come into the UFC, said he never would have fought Devontae Smith unless it was to get into the UFC. That would have been the only way he would have fought him, right? But his UFC jitters were kind of tabled a little bit because he's staring across at a very familiar face. And I think that worked for Worthy. But for Devontae Smith, a guy who's really been sort of propped up by the UFC, this fight had a lot of risk despite what the betting odds suggested. And, you know, I don't know. I think he kind of did himself a disservice by just being willing to take on all comers. And sometimes you need to be willing as a fighter, even though you've put in a training camp, to say, you know what, the guys that I'm ready to go against aren't here. I just, the risk reward I didn't think was there for Devontae Smith. And he really paid dearly for the decision to take this fight against his buddy.
Without a doubt. Listen, having the proper mindset is critical to success in mixed martial arts. And if you have something like that in the back of your mind where you know you're going to fight a friend, a guy who has helped you train for a lot of fights, that's a fucked up place to be. And, you know, and I'm sorry, but I feel like there's a piece of the people who put the fights together in the UFC sometimes where they get off seeing these kind of things. Like, I feel like a lot of times they want to see teammates facing each other. I hate it because, again, if two guys don't really want to fight each other, you're not going to get the best fight. There's a ton of other people in the division. Why does it have to be those two guys? Or just push the fight. Get another fight. Have them fight on another card or another event. I know it's not the easiest thing to do, and maybe not everyone's available. But at the same time, man, I do feel like, you know, there's this part or there's element where people – in the organization kind of get off on seeing two friends fight, and it kind of sucks. It's a shitty place to be.
Yeah, I would have liked to have seen Devontae Smith maybe turned around in a few weeks. And I think they just want to preserve his slot on the card. But now this is going to be something that is going to set him back for a little bit. And we'll see how it goes. You know, if he had won this fight, he was probably looking at a top 15, if not top 20 type opponent. And now we'll see what Kama Worthy can do. But when you start to get to know some of these guys, like we got to know Kama Worthy to see how long it took him to get to the UFC. He's got a little baby girl, Marley, that's 11 months old. And to get a $50,000 bonus and a win like this, truly what dreams are made of and a complete life and game changer. So congratulations to the Death Star, Kama Worthy, on a big win. And congrats to the UFC on a big show this weekend. We will be back with you in less than a week. We will recap. No, we won't have anything to recap. So we'll do picks, actually, for the UFC fight night in Shenzhen, China, and the main event for the strawweight title between Jessica Andrade and Zhang Weili. And, of course, keep it locked to Anik Florian Pod on both Twitter and Instagram, because we will likely have an Instagram live for you either Thursday or Friday of this week. May RockyBJJ.com. Ken Flo is off to the school right now. The most beautiful jiu-jitsu setting has ever been created. With that, for the Flo and TJ DeSantis, John Anik saying so long for now. Appreciate y'all listening. And I got to say, too, Flo, on the way out, had to run into 25, 30 people who talked to me about the podcast this weekend.
And oh, that's awesome.
I appreciate those interactions to such an extent. And I love getting my Ken Flo analysis every Monday morning. Hope you did, too. We will talk to you in less than 7 days. Until then, don't text and drive. Go
there. The John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast is a TJ DeSantis production. Its content is intended for private use only.
sports betting is sweeping across the country faster than the coronavirus, and Wagering Week is your antidote. I'm Tom Martin, and I'm a veteran sports analyst and respected sports handicapper who helped build ESPN's brand. I've been recognized and awarded by Pro Football Weekly and Gaming Today magazine as the honest handicapper. Let the other guys give you the same old boring sports talk with the same tired storylines. We'll give it to you straight here every Friday on Wagering Week. Don't gamble with other podcasts. Let Sports Garden Network's Wagering Week help your bottom line.